Good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it is February 10th, Wednesday. We're going to finish up the introductory chapter to Bones today. And let's see, we have a test coming up, a lecture test, and that is going to be, I would like it to be Monday, but what's wrong with Monday? It's a holiday, yeah, so please don't come to school on Monday because it's a holiday, right? And as a matter of fact, if you have any classes on Friday, it's a holiday as well. So both Friday and Monday are holidays. So that means that our test is going to be 1 week from today, right? So it's going to be on Wednesday, and it's going to cover chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5, so four chapters. Okay, good, so everybody's aware. And you need a Cypress College picture ID, a pencil, eraser, and let's see what else. Scantron 882E, right? Get one with the bubbles that are blank, not filled in with any of the green color or whatever colors they're made out of. Okay. All right, so does anybody have any questions? Any questions at all? Oh, yeah. Oh, I tell you what, I can't hear you. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean, Cypress College picture ID. Okay, and get those stamps on the back, all right, so that you can check things out of the library and whatever else, right? Don't you get stamps? I have to pick up stamps for my, when I take a class. Okay, so, oh, Blackboard. I was messing around on my computer at home, which is running Vista, and I noticed something a little bit funny, and I don't know if people noticed it as well. Before. All right, so when you answer a question, what's the safest way to answer a question and get to the new one without hanging up your computer? Enter. Hit enter, let that window pop up, and then hit enter again. Don't do it too fast. All right, and then you get to the next question. Okay, what must happen when a concentration gradient is eliminated? Let's see, diffusion and osmosis stop. I like that one. Okay. On my computer at home, if I hit enter, it works just fine. But if for some reason, if I click anywhere in this field over here, all right, there's a little box that disappears. And if I hit enter, the computer ignores me. Okay, and I can hit enter a bunch of times. If that happens, then I have to come over here and hit the arrow. So maybe some of you are running Vista, and if you click someplace around here, just by accident maybe, okay, you can't use the enter command. Right, and maybe that's just on my computer or my monitor. You know, there's just so many things that could be going on. So click the answer that you like, and then immediately, right, make double check it, but then hit enter. And if enter doesn't work, hopefully you can see this right here, and then click on it. Okay. Has anybody else run into that? No? Okay. That might not be here nor there. That just might be on my machine at home. Okay. All right, so we'll put that away. We'll put this away. And this away. What is all that stuff? Okay, so let's see. What are we talking about? Ah, the parts of a long bone, right? So you should know what the parts of the skeletal system are. Yes, question. No, just those two, as far as I know.
Nothing on the next step?
No. The forever quiz is just kind of is on the syllabus and on your internet connection. All right, so they're going to be active the whole time during the class in case you want to check your internet connection. Maybe you buy a different computer or something and use the speed test and see if it's working well enough to take a quiz.
And then the weekly quizzes?
The weekly quizzes are every week, Tuesday at 11.
One, two, and three.
So they should be in your grade book.
Yeah, and then after that is the remedial.
Oh, yeah, every week. On Tuesday, guess what time on Tuesday? 11 p.m. Yeah, every week, Tuesday. It's going to be clockwork until... But, I usually put a whole segment on for the whatever test is coming up. Okay, so I have a bunch of weeks for the first test, and then I'm going to put a bunch of weeks for the second test, and then I'll put a whole bunch. So if you want to go, if you want to speed up through that and get it over with, yeah, you'll be able to do that. Okay? So I'll put the next bunch of weeks up for the second test. Okay, so some students are working ahead of schedule. That's good. But if you're working ahead of schedule and you didn't complete an assignment in the previous week, don't forget that you have to go back and complete it by, what, Tuesday at 11 p.m. Yeah, okay. So does that answer your question?
Kind of. So we didn't know when you were going to put the new one up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that should be there right now for you.
It wasn't.
Oh, it's not there?
No, it's not there. Because it says it's got that thing that says if you go and hit right.
Okay, no, I activate. I have to check and see why it's not there. But that should be there. That should have been there. That should have been there actually Tuesday at 11. That's when I activate. Okay, so it's that. I'll go check exactly what's happening with that. So that answers your question. That's your question, because you should be working on that assignment this week already. Okay. All right, I'll go check and see why, and it's just a quiz, right? It's just a quiz? That's not...
I haven't seen any of the quiz yet. There's nothing there. It just says if you enter right here along the line,
yeah.
You will...
Ah, you'll be dropped from the class.
Yeah, it'll be something
instructor's folder. All right, sounds like some funny programming. I'll have to double check. Okay. All right, I'll check on that. Because when I log in, I have different privileges than you. So that's one of the little problems with Blackboard, because I don't see exactly what you see. So it looks fine to me, but that's because I have more privileges in the programming environment. Okay, I'll double check. So if that ever happens, you're welcome to give me an email, and I'll check on that. Okay. All right, so what about bones? What are the components of bones? You got three components. Well, not bones, but skeletal system. What are the components of the skeletal system? Somebody was hot. Somebody's real hot. Who said that? Ligaments is one thing.
Tendons.
Okay. Tendons, we're going to put in the muscle chapter. Because a ligament is a bone-to-bone connection. Tendon is a muscle-to-bone. Okay. So ligament I like.
Cartilage.
And bone. Now, what do all three of those have in common? In terms of tissues. They're all connective tissues. And right, like ligaments are dense, regular. Bone is just bone connective tissue. And cartilage is cartilage connective tissue. And you know the different kinds of cartilage. All right, so we talked about the different shapes of bones, right? And now we're using a typical long bone to understand some of the internal structure of bone, right? So we talked about the membrane that's on the outside of a bone. That's called the periosteum. And every space inside of a bone is lined with a membrane as well. That's called the endosteum, right? So anytime you hear osteo, you should immediately think of bone. Like osteocyte is a bone cell, mature bone cell. All right, so just like every organ, there's usually a difference between the superficial part of the organ compared to the deep part of the organ. What's the superficial part called? The superficial part of any organ, like the adrenal gland, is called the cortex. The cortex is the superficial part, and the deep part is called the medulla. So bone is an organ because it has a number of different kinds of connective tissue and epithelium and all that, right? So it's an organ. So here we see superficial bone and its cortical bone. It also is also called compact bone because look how solid it is. And as a matter of fact, you can come over here and see how solid that bone is. As opposed to deeper parts of the bone, which we call medullary bone, notice that it has a bunch of bony plates. It's not solid or compact like cortical bone. Those bony plates are what we call trabeculae. And so sometimes we call medullary bone trabecular bone. Sometimes it's called cancellous bone. And in your notes, I gave you a list of different ways that you could describe medullary bone. All right, but in any case, if you have medullary bone, there's a membrane that covers every surface right here. And what do we call that membrane? What's that membrane? Do I want to say periosteum? No. Would you say osteum of some kind? Yeah, because it's bone. That is the, what, endosteum right here. You see endosteum? That's the membrane that covers every surface inside the bone. Okay, so then we talked about the epiphyses being the ends of the bones, and what's the shaft called? Yeah, the diaphysis, right? Diaphysis. All right, and these spaces inside bone are not wasted. They're filled with stuff, okay? And there are two kinds of things that you can put in the spaces inside bone. And this big cavity right here is called the medullary cavity. And it's called marrow. And there's two kinds. It can be yellow marrow or red marrow. What is yellow marrow? It's fat. Yeah, that's just a storage place for fat, which is an energy molecule. That's good to have. And if it's red marrow, then that's a hematopoietic tissue, which means what? It's responsible for making red blood cells. Right? So red bone marrow is there to make red blood cells. And is that a good thing? Because how many red blood cells do you lose every second?
2 million.
Yeah, 2 million. So your body's got to replace those. Right? You have to have red bone marrow in your body. All right, let's see. What else did I miss on here? Here is the periosteum. Oh, I didn't talk about these fibers that attach the periosteum to the cortical bone surface. Those are called Sharpey's fibers. All right, and then in a few places, there are arteries that enter the bone because bone is a living tissue. It's filled with living cells. It needs oxygen and nutrients. And where it enters, we call that a nutrient foramen. Remember, a foramen is just a hole in a bone. Okay, and so we call that a nutrient foramen because these blood vessels are entering the bone. All right, let's go to the next slide right here. All right, some bones are not long bones, some are flat. For instance, like these cranial bones right here, but nonetheless, the cortical surface is what kind of bone?
Compact.
And the medullary bone is spongy, right, or trabecular or cancellous, however you want to talk about it. And sometimes if it's a flat bone, we call that diploe. All right? So even flat bones have the same kind of internal structure. Oh, I'm missing. Where am I missing here? Where's my this is what I'm looking for. Okay. So let's look at just a wedge out of this nice long bone out of here, right along the diaphysis of the bone. So we're going to look at the structural and functional unit that makes up compact bone. And for the first practicum, you've seen this, right? And what does this kind of remind you of when you looked at compact bone underneath the microscope? Yeah, like tree rings, right? Like a trunk of a tree or something. That's a very important structure. So I see one of the structures here. I see another one here and another one here. Right, and some more out over here. These are called osteons. Osteo, again, remember, means bone. Okay, so an osteon is just a tube within tubes within tubes. And a tubular structure is very important because it resists compression. So bone is very, very strong because it resists compression. So here I have a tube drawn on the board, and I want to write down what these different forces are, what we call these different forces that can act on a bone. So a force that is going to try to compress a bone, okay, well, we call that compression, right? So if we try to squeeze a bone down, that's compression. And there are forces that act on a bone that are trying to pull it apart from end to end. We don't call that compression. What do we call that? Like if you're holding onto a rope on one end and I'm holding it onto the other and I start pulling, I'm applying what to that rope?
Tension.
Yeah, tension. That's great. Tension. Well, what else? Another kind of force that you can apply to that bone is a twisting motion. And that we call, yeah, you can call that a rotation or torsion. All right, so we got these three kinds of forces that can be applied to a bone. And what can you tell me about bone? Do you want a bone to break? No, you want it to be able to resist all of these different kinds of forces without breaking. And a bone has been designed through evolutionary processes to resist all of these different kinds of forces. Okay. So the first force we're talking about is compression. And the matrix that's inside bone is made out of calcium phosphate. It acts like cement. And cement is very good for compression as well. You can put a lot of weight on like a cement pillar right here, and it's not going to crumble. All right? But if you start to pull on that pillar, even though it's made out of concrete, the concrete is just going to crumble. It won't be able to withstand that force. Or if you twist that column, it's going to crumble. It's only made to resist compression. All right? So another feature of bone is that it is circular, right? All those tubes inside tubes. And what can you tell me about a tube? If I have this straw right here, if I try to compress it, is it really easy to compress or hard? I mean, it's just really flimsy plastic, but because it's a tube, it resists compression because of that nature of the tube. So here I brought a weight, big heavy book, okay? And I'm going to try and balance it on the straw. Do you think the straw can hold this big heavy book up? Okay, some people say no. Let's see, I need a nice apparatus to balance it just right. Okay, so I'm not really holding the book up at all. And look at that straw. It's kind of wiggling around a little bit, but it's not folding. It's not compressing because that tube is really, really strong. It resists compression. All right, but what about from the side? Let's use this straw right here. All right, if we put it on the side like that and put the book on it, what's going to happen? All right, it's just going to fall down right away because we're not applying pressure properly. But bones, okay, you don't want bones to snap in the middle, so it has to have some other components to resist those other kinds of forces, which are what? Tension and torsion. All right, so the tubular nature resists compression. What are some other things inside bone that resist these other forces? Well, between the tubes, there are collagen fibers. All right, so these resist twisting, and they resist tension because collagen is what? The strongest fiber that's in your body. So bone has some different structures associated with it. Okay, so these are what we call lamellae. Right, the different layers of the tubes are called lamellae. So we can go back over here. Okay, so the ones on the outside of the bone are called circumferential lamellae. And the ones that make up the osteons inside are called the concentric lamellae. Concentric lamellae versus circumferential lamellae. And what do? These resist compression. All right, and what are the components in bone that resist torsion and tension? Those are the collagen fibers that are put between the lamellae. So bone is really strong, not only in terms of compression, but also in terms of twisting or torsion and tension as well. It works really, really nice. Okay. So the two main components in bone, you have the calcium and phosphate that makes up the osteoid material that resists compression in these lamellae right here. And what are the names of the cells that maintain those fibers? And actually, those would be right here in these little pits. These are the osteocytes, right? These are osteocytes. And this material right here is very, very hard and solid, so oxygen and nutrients can't diffuse through this material. But don't forget, these cells are alive. They need oxygen and nutrients. How do they get oxygen and nutrients? Okay, in the center of every osteon is a blood supply, is a blood vessel. Okay, and sometimes we call that the Haversian canal, that's running right up through the center of the osteon, bringing nutrients to these cells, and they can diffuse through these little canaliculi, little tiny canals in the matrix, right? And so all these cells can communicate with each other via these, like, they're not really cracks, they're supposed to be there, so we call them canaliculi. All right, and what is this little hole in the bone matrix called? That's a lacuna. Okay, so you see the compact bone on the cortical surface, and you see the trabecular bone deep inside. So what else do we see on this slide? I see perforating canals. Sometimes we call that a Volkmann canal, that move laterally within the bone. Again, bringing nutrients to all of these living cells. And what else about this slide? You know what? I think that's pretty good. So you got the structural and functional unit of compact bone. All right, what's the name of the structural and functional unit of compact bone? What would you call that thing? It is the osteon, right? Or you could call that the Haversian system. And what makes up an osteon? Well, in the center, you got the Haversian canal. You've got all of these concentric lamellae. You've got osteocytes, right? And between the lamellae, you've got those collagen fibers. And the other thing about those fibers is, look at the orientation from one layer to the next. Do they all go in the same direction? No, they go in opposite directions, right? So that gives even more strength to bone in terms of resisting tension and torsion. So if you look at a piece of plywood or maybe at one of your tires, okay, And tires and plywood have different layers, okay? And let's consider plywood. Wood has a grain associated with it, all right? And so when people make plywood, do they take the wood grain and match it up so that every layer has the grain matching in the same direction? As a matter of fact, what they do when they make plywood is they take the grain and rotate it a little bit, and then take the next layer and rotate it a little bit, right? So that the grains don't all line up. That makes plywood even stronger because the grains don't match up, right? So these collagen fibers are not supposed to match up from one lamellae to the other. They're supposed to be almost perpendicular to each other, and that even gives more strength to an osteon. Okay, so I think I'm done talking about compact bone. Here is what a nice micrograph looks like on cross-section. You're familiar with all of this, but you didn't have to know a couple of these things for the first practicum, like the central canal right here that has a blood vessel in it. What's another name for that central canal? Haversian canal. Okay. You didn't have to name these little passageways between the lacunae. What do we call these little passageways? Those are canaliculi. Right? You had to know the name of that cell, of course, was an osteocyte. You didn't have to know the name of these different layers right here. These are called concentric lamellae. And then the layers that go, the tubes that actually go around the whole surface of the bone, those would be the circumferential lamellae. So you get, you also didn't have to know these perforating canals, right? Sharpies fibers and the periosteum. So you have to know a lot more about bone in this chapter. Okay. So let me just see. Did I miss anything? No, we're doing pretty good. All right, so we said that the matrix, the component that resists compression, are the mineral salts called hydroxyapatites. And they're basically just derivatives of calcium ions and phosphate ions that are put together in different chemical combinations that we call hydroxyapatite. So you don't have to memorize the structure of hydroxyapatite, but maybe you should just be a little aware of what it's called and what the two main components are. What are the two main components of hydroxyapatite? Calcium and phosphate, right? And your body can't make calcium, can't make phosphate. You have to have these compounds in your diet. Okay, so these inorganic components provide hardness and resist crushing or compression. All right, and the organic components are what? The collagen fibers. They're important for resisting tension, the pulling apart of a bone, or the twisting or torsion of a bone. So you should be able to match up in your mind what components of a bone resist tension, and that's collagen, and you should know collagen is what? An organic component. The component that resists compression is hydroxyapatite, which is calcium and phosphate. That's inorganic material. Okay. And there are cells that we find in bone. We got three kinds of cells. For that first practicum, you only had to know of one, which we call the osteocyte. You find that in lacunae, but there are two other kinds of cells in bone. One is called an osteoblast. This is the kind of cell that actually builds bone, responsible for bone growth. And the second one is called an osteoclast. An osteoclast is a bone, kind of cell, I'm sorry, that breaks bone down. So a blast is a builder, a clast is a bone breaker downer, okay? Okay. All right, so which two of these cells, of these three that we have right here, work in opposition to each other? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? The osteoblast and the osteoclast are doing two different things that oppose each other. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing, because what do we call that concept? Antagonism, right? And who's that car manufacturer that's having a big problem? Toyota, having a problem with both of those, having a problem with the accelerator and a brake pedal. Whoa, I don't know if it's really a problem or not, but they're really getting hammered, okay? But those are two antagonistic mechanisms in a car that you have to have, right, in order to have precise control and balance over that automobile. The same thing for your bones. right? You need cells that build it up and break it down. They have to be working together so that you have precise control and balance over your body. If one functions more than the other, then something bad is going to happen to your bones, right? If the osteoclasts work harder than the osteoblasts, then you're going to lose bone. What do we call that process where you lose bone? Osteoporosis is what I'm thinking of, right? Okay. So those cells have to be maintained in balance. And osteoporosis is a really strange kind of disease process from the following standpoint. Let's think of another disease. What's another one that we're talking about a lot? Maybe not so much today, but maybe a couple months ago. There was a flu virus everybody was really scared of. Like what? Swine flu, H1N1, right? And it could possibly kill a lot of people, right? But would it kill everybody in here?
No.
Okay, so even if there is a very virulent disease going around, the whole population won't come down with that particular disease. Why is that? Go ahead, look around the room. Why is that? Kind of as plain as the nose on your face, which is different than everybody else, right? Because we're all different. We're a very diverse population. And so it's very rare for a disease process to affect everybody in that population. And the reason is because it's a very diverse population. Osteoporosis is kind of a strange disease because, you know what, it's going to affect everybody if you're lucky enough to live old enough. All right, so as we get older, we're going to lose bone mass, and that's called osteoporosis. Right? Women are especially susceptible to that, but that happens to men as well. Do you know how to protect yourself from osteoporosis? Yeah, you hate to hear this. This is the one a lot of people just walk out of the room. Diet and exercise. Okay? So you have to have proper levels of calcium and phosphate in your diet, but you can't just eat right. You also have to exercise. Right? So think of your muscle right here, your biceps. And if you were to walk around all day and curl like a 5-pound weight, what would happen to that biceps? Yeah, it would hurt the next day, right? But what else would happen to that biceps? As long as you don't kill it by exercising too much, okay? Is it going to stay the same? Like in a month or so, what's going to happen? It's going to respond to that stress and it's going to get bigger and stronger, okay? So that muscle is a living tissue and bone is a living tissue as well. So that if you apply tension and force to a muscle, to a bone, it's going to get bigger and stronger as well. As a matter of fact, our bones are completely rebuilt in our body every 5 years. Right? So the skeleton you have today is not anything like the skeleton you had 5 years ago. So if you start exercising and stressing that skeleton, it's going to get bigger and stronger, and this is very important to do this for women premenopausally, because your bones will get bigger and stronger, so that by the time you go through menopause, you can afford to give a lot of bones away, a lot of bone mass away, and it won't be a clinical problem for you. Okay, so diet and exercise, especially what? Premenopausally. And if you have a big bone structure, you're going to be protected from osteoporosis, but if you're a dainty framed person, then you're going to be more susceptible to osteoporosis, and you're the kind of person that should really exercise to keep those bones nice and healthy and strong, right, before you reach menopause. All right, so that's why I think it's a weird kind of disease process, because we'll all have to deal with that, even men and women, right? But the thinner you are in terms of bone structure, the more susceptible you're going to be compared to somebody that has bigger, stronger bones. All right, so make sure you know what component of the bone resists torsion. What component resists compression? Which component resists tension? And know what those words mean. Okay. All right, so let's talk continually, let's talk about bone formation and growth. Okay. There are two kinds of bone formation. And one is called intramembranous ossification. Guess what that ossification means? The making of bone, right? Osteo or osseo should refer to bone. And intramembranous means that bone is going to develop within a membrane that exists someplace in your body. So some bones before they're made, exist or are modeled by membranes. And then they ossify, and then you have a bone that's kind of like a sheet, that's kind of like a flat bone someplace. Another kind of process is called endochondrial ossification. What does this, when you see chondro or chondrial? Cartilage, right? So here's a second kind of ossification process where a model of the bone is made out of cartilage first, and then that cartilage model is filled in with bone, and that's typically how long bones develop. All right, so these are the two kinds of processes. So intramembranous ossification starts as a membrane, and then you have the kinds of cells that can build the bone matrix. They migrate into the membrane and start to go to work. And what kind of cell is responsible for building bone? That's the osteoblast, right? So we have osteoblasts in that membrane, and they start to lay down that hydroxyapatite and the collagen fibers, and that builds bone. All right, and then after the bone is made, those osteoblasts become osteocytes after they're completely surrounded by bone. All right, so all these, even these osteocytes at one time were the osteoblasts right here. All right, so at birth, bones are not completely formed, and this is going to be a really good thing, especially in the head, right? Because most of the skull bones are made from intramembranous ossification, so that when it's time to be born, right, you have to move through the birth canal. So if you have this big bony head, right, you're going to have a really hard time going through the birth canal. And maybe that's hard on you, but it's even harder for the mom, right? So the flat bones of the skull, since they're made out of membranes first, the head can deform a lot as it's going through the birth canal. All right, so that's really, really important. But there's something else, too, that aids in parturition. Let me look over here. Did I close that folder? Oh, no, here it is. Okay. So some of you have had lab already. And I'm looking for a fetal skull. I don't see a fetal skull right here. This might be close. All right, well, here's an x-ray of a fetus, and here we can see the frontal bone, here's the parietal bone, and here's a big space between them. Eventually, this is going to become a joint that we call a suture, okay? But there's going to be spaces between these bones in the fetal skull that aren't formed, so that the fetal skull can twist and compress a lot during birth. And those things we call soft spots, right? But they have a scientific name. They're called fontanelles. All right, so in lab you have to know a number of different fontanelles, like the frontal fontanelle, the mastoidal fontanelle back over here. And I think that's important to know about these fontanelles, because it aids in the delivery of this fetus right here, but it has some implications that you have to protect an infant's brain or head, right? Because they have these soft spots right here. And when do those soft spots go away? So you have to be concerned about a baby for, okay, 2 years. Somebody said three. That's not bad, but they're there for a really long period of time, okay? And so not only from puncturing do you have to be aware of, but for shaking an infant's head, right, or twisting or whatever. Any kind of head trauma is really, really bad for an infant because of those fontanelles. All right, so most bones of the skull are built from intramembranous ossification. And there is another bone that you should know. Oh, it says right here, 24 months. Good, you're reading your notes. The clavicle, which make up your collarbone right here, also develops from intramembranous ossification. So that's kind of interesting, okay? Flat bones of the skull as well as the clavicles develop from intramembranous ossification. All right, what's the other kind? Endochondrial ossification. So where a bone is going to be in an adult is built out of hyaline cartilage first. Okay, so all bones in the rest of the body are made from endochondrial ossification, right? But don't forget, except the clavicles. That's intramembranous ossification. All right, so the cartilage model is ossified in stages. and it's due to a number of different ossification centers. So let's talk about how that works. Okay. Well, so first you have a model of the bone that's made out of hyaline cartilage. And the first part of this model that starts to ossify is in the very center, but in the periphery of the bone, right? So the cortical surface, right, starts to ossify. There are what's the name of these cells that start to build this bone right here? Osteoblasts, right? But just like in a regular bone, there is a membrane that covers the surface. We call that the periosteum. The periosteum primarily has osteoblasts in it, right? So this is a way. This is what we call the primary ossification center. And the bone develops from the outside. Then at a later time, those osteoblasts migrate to the interior part of the cell, right, and start to lay down bone matrix in the interior of the bone. All right, now, but where is this happening? On the diaphysis or the epiphyses of the bone? Yeah, this is on the diaphysis. All right, so then the bone gets pretty strong, and then the last area that starts to ossify, deep inside the epiphyses of this cartilaginous model, you have osteoblasts starting to build bone over here. This is what we call the secondary ossification center. And there's another one in the distal epiphysis. Okay, and there is a balance between osteoblasts and osteoclasts because this bone is, what's the nature of this bone? Does it look compact or spongy? It's spongy. So there are osteoclasts working here also, dissolving part of the bone that's being made to make it, what, very light and to have spaces in it for bone marrow. All right, and so then finally, this area, the secondary ossification center, meets the primary ossification center right over here, and you have this line of cartilage that contains cartilage, and on the periphery, you have the osteoblasts that are building bone, right? And here you can see it up over here as well. And this forms a plate in the proximal epiphysis and the distal epiphysis over here, and sometimes we call that the epiphyseal plate. So you've got bone on the epiphysis, you've got this plate. What's this plate made out of? Cartilage, and then here you have the bone that makes up the diaphysis. Well, what can you tell me is stronger? Is bone stronger or this hyaline cartilage stronger? Bone is a lot stronger, right? So these plates right here, these epiphyseal plates, are how a bone grows in length from epiphysis to epiphysis. All right, but you just told me that it's very, very delicate material. This is true. It can be easily damaged when kids are horsing around, okay? What's one thing that we all like to do when we were just little kids? Like get on a swing back and forth, get as high as you could, okay? And then as you got really, really high, what's a really cool thing you could do? Yeah, jump off the swing when you're really, really high, go flying through the air, and that was great, except what? What's the last thing? Well, landing was always really rough, okay? What are you doing? You're compressing all those bones, axial compression. Well, bones could tolerate that pretty well, but what about this cartilage right here? Can't tolerate it. But what's the importance of that epiphyseal plate? That's how a bone grows in length, right? So when you do that kind of stuff, or jumping from the monkey bars or something, you can damage these epiphyseal plates, and then the outcome of that is that bone, that particular bone, maybe it's just one leg and not the other, stops growing, okay, because you need those epiphyseal plates, which is too bad when that happens, right? Because then as you grow up, what do you need? You need a lift in one shoe and not the other, okay? Okay, so, yeah, that's kind of unfortunate when that happens, but it does happen. So if you have kids that are really roughhousing, you know, try to think about this epiphyseal plate. All right, but that's just one kind of force, was what? Compression can damage that epiphyseal plate. What are some other things? Oh, I didn't bring my baseball. What are some other things? What are some other forces that you can apply to bone? Like torsion, twisting. When would a little kid want to twist their humerus or twist some bones in their forearm? Anybody have any little kids playing like Little League baseball? Okay. Well, little leaguers are taught when they throw a pitch, especially pitchers, that they can throw a fastball, right, which is just straight. Just throw a ball as fast as you can, just straight, and you don't twist the bones. But if you try to throw other kinds of pitches, like curveballs or screwballs or other kinds of things, what are you doing? You're twisting those bones, right, as hard as you can, and that can also damage the epiphyseal plates. And that would be really bad, because what arm are they damaging? Their strong arm, their important arm, right? So kids in Little League are taught not to throw any of those fancier kinds of pitches like curveballs and things like that, because we're trying to protect what? This epiphyseal plate, which is how the bone grows in length during development. Okay. So in the epiphyseal plate and in the periosteum, you primarily have osteoblasts. And in the endosteum, all right, guess what kind of cell you have in the endosteum? What's happening in the medullary part of the bone? It's being hollowed out all the time. So it's nice and light and strong. Guess what kind of cells predominate the endosteum? Those are the osteoclasts, right? So it's the job of your body to maintain that balance between the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts, and it's easy to do when you're young. Okay, unfortunately, as we all get older, those osteoclasts get a little bit busier than the osteoblasts, and we have a tendency to lose bone mass, unfortunately. And we just call that, what, osteoporosis. All right, so that's bone growth. Appositional growth is growth of bone by adding bone to its surfaces. What kind of membrane adds bone to the surface? That is the periosteum, right? Periosteum. So if I go back to this slide right here, we can see how a bone actually grows in two different ways. It can grow in diameter, or it can grow in length. So if a bone is going to grow in length, what center is building new bone? Or what part of this long bone here is working to build bone if it's going to grow in length? It is the epiphyseal plates, okay? But if it's going to grow in diameter, it's due to the osteoblasts that are in the periosteum right here by appositional bone growth, right? So periosteum is responsible for bone growth in diameter. Bone growth in length is due to the epiphyseal plates. All right, now you don't have these epiphyseal plates your whole life. When do they go away? Anybody know? Because you don't grow your whole life, right? You don't get to be like 40 feet tall. You stop growing. When do you stop growing? It's associated with puberty, right? Okay, so when sex hormones start to develop, you get a little bit of a growth spurt, okay, but then at the end of puberty, these epiphyseal plates actually ossify completely. They turn into bone. And it's no longer a growth center, so what happens? You stop growing tall. Now, in terms of gender, who matures, who reaches puberty sooner? Men or boys or girls? Men or women? Usually female. That's a good way of putting it. Females reach puberty sooner. They mature more quickly. So within a family, that kind of explains why women are shorter than their brothers. Okay, that's not, you can't generalize in a population because there are tall women, short women, right? But within a family, women typically are a little bit shorter. Why is that? Because they reach puberty sooner in life compared to their brothers, and those epiphyseal plates ossify, right? So that's kind of a nice understanding, again, reinforcing the function of these epiphyseal plates right here. Okay, bones, like I said, are remodeled all the time. You exercise a bone, it's going to get bigger and stronger. If you exercise a muscle, it's going to do what? It's going to get bigger and stronger. Okay, we're going to carry on this concept for one last thing, and that is, if you exercise your brain, guess what? It's going to get bigger and stronger as well. We've learned a lot about the brain. Your brain is actually going to change its structure the more you use it, right? And if you use it in learning anatomy, it develops in a way to learn anatomy, right? If you learn how to use your brain for mathematics, right, that's another way of doing it. Or languages. Those are, mathematics and languages are very powerful tools that you can use to maintain the function and structure of your brain. Okay? So all that studying that you're doing is really good. Your brain at the end of this class is not going to be like anything that it was like before. Okay, it's going to actually change quite a bit. All right, same thing for bones. Okay, they're being remodeled depending on what kind of stress you're applying to them. And don't forget, those osteoclasts break bone down and removes them. Osteoblasts then will build bone up to make the bone strong in areas that it needs to be strong at. And this process, you know, works pretty quickly. So what part of a bone is going to be experiencing stress? What part of a bone experiences stress? And what do we call that thing? Okay, stress fractures. If you overstress a bone, it could break. But what is a thing that's going to stress a bone? It's something that contracts or shortens. What is that kind of tissue in your body that actually can shorten? What's that called? That's called a muscle, right? Okay, a muscle. So a muscle is going to pull on a bone. What does a muscle use to pull on a bone? There's a connection between a muscle and a bone. It's called a tendon. Yeah, it's very much like a ligament. It's dense, regular connective tissue. Okay. And bones, what's a bone surface like when a tendon inserts into it, when a tendon is grabbing on a bone and pulling on it? Is it just going to look like a nice flat surface right here? Okay. Those of you that have lab already, okay, when we start talking about lab, that part of the bone is going to be raised. It's going to be big and thick and strong, and it's going to have a really rough surface. We call that, what do we call that? Raised rough surface on a bone. That's called a process. Okay, so we're going to learn a bunch of processes in here, and it's for muscle attachment. So when a muscle is pulling on that bone, it's just going to get bigger and stronger in that location, and it's going to be easily recognized as being really rough and raised. And we call that a process. It has, there are different names for processes that you'll learn in the next couple of weeks, okay? And this remodeling process is especially important when you break a bone, all right? So what happens when you break a bone? One of the first things is there hemorrhage associated with a fracture? Yeah, because do you have blood going into a bone? Yeah, absolutely, right? Like the Haversian canal has blood vessels in it. All right, so is that a good thing or a bad thing? Okay, well, it all depends on what process we're thinking about. When you fracture a bone, you have to be concerned because you could bleed too much. As a matter of fact, you could die of a fracture if you hemorrhage a lot. But the good thing is, since there's blood going to a bone, it's going to heal very quickly because you have nutrients and oxygen getting into that bone. So it's actually a very good thing that bone is highly vascular. So the first thing that happens, hopefully, is that a clot is formed. And that's going to limit the hemorrhage in that particular area so that you don't bleed to death. All right. After 2 to 3 days, a callus is formed. And a callus is just due to a bunch of fibroblasts that get into that fracture zone. And what does a fibroblast secrete? Fibers, like what kind of fibers? Well, it could be all kinds, right? It could be collagen, elastic, and reticular. But if you want to glue those fractures together, what kind of fiber would you secrete if you had a choice? Well, collagen. Yeah, that's going to stabilize that fracture, and we call that a callus. So a callus is formed with those collagen fibers kind of just gluing all those bone fragments together, stabilizing the bone. But are those collagen fibers as strong as bone? No. So a callus still is pretty weak, right? And after about 2 to 3 days, once that callus is formed, you don't want to disturb the callus because it's still kind of delicate. And if you fracture a bone after that callus is formed, then the bone might not grow back the way that it should. Okay. So what do we do for bones to help them heal? Yeah, you cast them, if at all possible, right? And so that stabilizes what part of that healing process? The callus. So that the bone doesn't refracture in that area. All right, so the callus is just that fibrous network, mostly collagen. All right, there are chondroblasts that move in there and form cartilage, and all of that holds the bones together. All right, and then after the callus is formed, osteoblasts enter the callus and develop and then deposit a new bone matrix. And that process is really quick, right? Within about 4 to 6 weeks, you have a nice strong bone. The callus is completely turned into bone, and that part of the bone is probably stronger than what it was originally. Okay, so you have nice big thick cortical bone in that area, and that will happen as long as you don't do what? Disturb that callus before the bone is completely healed. And so that's the purpose of casting bones. All right, so because bone is highly vascular, that's really good. It heals really, really well, as opposed to other kinds of tissues that don't heal very well when they're damaged, like ligaments and tendons. They're pretty much avascular, and cartilage is avascular, so cartilaginous injuries. Well, that's something I didn't mention. I'll point it out right now. Okay, if you damage cartilage, like a knee meniscus or articular cartilage, right, it just doesn't heal. And if it's damaged to the point where it should be removed, like a knee meniscus, or if it's just damaged because of arthritis or whatever, the only way that we know to help those bones out is actually to get a transplant. Okay? Where do you get a transplant from? Yeah, from a cadaver. Right? And that can always be problematic, because when you accept human tissues, then you have to be really careful about getting disease, like hepatitis, for instance, or other kinds of diseases from the cadaver that you're getting that specimen from. Okay. All right, I was going to say one last thing that I forgot to mention on that picture of a typical long bone. We have some of these long bones in lab, right? So make sure you can label, pick up the real specimen so that you say, oh, compact bone, spongy bone, medullary bone. This is what, the medullary cavity, the epiphyses, right? And I think you can see these epiphyseal lines on those bones that we have in lab. And the thing that I forgot to mention while discussing it, this bone right here, it's not labeled, but you see this that kind of looks like a nice sky blue right here? And there's a blue right up over here, all right? Was I close with that color?
Yeah.
Sky blue? I'm getting good with colors. I can't even tell different kinds of blue, okay? So that is a hyaline cartilage. Sometimes we call that articular cartilage, right? So articular cartilage covers the epiphyses of long bones, and it helps make up a joint so that bones will glide and slide over each other without grinding each other away. All right, so if we have a couple just sticks of cement and grind that cement together, what's going to happen? They're going to get ground down. All right, same thing would happen to bone, but if it's covered with this nice articular cartilage, then the bone slides over each other, and it doesn't produce pain, doesn't deform the bone like we see in an arthritic process. Okay. So I think we're done with this chapter right here, unless someone's got a question. Somebody got a question? Pretty good. We talked about osteoporosis. Remember those three kinds of tensions, and what are the components in bone that resist or protect your bone from those particular forces? All right, so I'm going to say just a couple things with regard to the next chapter, but I want to find, where's that sign-in sheet going around? Who's got that sign-in sheet? Anybody got the sign-in? Hold up the sign-in sheet. Okay, when you're done, pass it down to the front, okay? So don't forget, your responsibility to do the sign-in sheets. Make sure you sign that sign-in sheet. All right, so our next chapter, I believe, is 7. All right, so we're done talking about some general properties of bones, and now we're going to start actually talking about some specific kinds of bones. So, all right, so don't leave yet. You got time. Class is not done. Don't make noise for people that are listening. So all the bones that make up the skeleton can be subdivided into two areas, right? And you should be aware of what bones make up these two different areas and what these areas are called. So they're called skeletons, and the first one is called the axial skeleton, which kind of makes up the center part of your body. So it includes the head, the neck, and the rib cage, and all the vertebrae. We call that the axial skeleton, as opposed to another kind of skeleton that makes up your appendages. So what's an appendage? Upper appendage would be your arm, lower appendage would be your leg. Okay. So you got axial skeleton and appendicular skeleton. So this is a pretty nice diagram right here that shows the axial skeleton in kind of a beige and the appendicular skeleton in kind of what, yellow. Thank you. Okay. Furthermore, there are some bones that help attach your appendicular skeleton to your axial skeleton. And we call those girdles. What does a girdle mean? What, to girdle something, a verb. What does girdle mean?
Hold,
maybe. But a girdle really means to surround something. Okay, to girdle, like to girdle a tree is to cut the bark all the way around the tree, so eventually that will kill the tree. I don't know why people would do that. Maybe they want to get rid of the tree, I guess, right? Okay, so to girdle something is to completely surround. So there are two girdles that help attach your upper appendages to your axial skeleton. And there are two bones that make up the girdle. We call that the pectoral girdle, right? This is the pectoral region right here. And the bones are the clavicle in the front and the scapula in the back. And it kind of surrounds, what, your upper trunk, sort of, right? But it attaches your upper appendage to your axial skeleton. The other girdle that attaches your lower appendage to your axial skeleton, we call those the adspaxae or the hip bones. And they kind of, what, surround your lower torso, surround your pelvic cavity. And so we call that the pelvic girdle. All right, so you got pectoral girdle and pelvic girdle. We can see the clavicle and scapula here, kind of surrounding and attaching the upper appendage and the two adspaxae bones that surround your pelvic cavity with the lower appendage attached to them. All right, so this is a pretty nice slide that shows that. All right, so we first start by talking about bones that make up the skull. Probably you're going to be looking at these in lab. And you can break the skull down into two kinds of bones as well. Okay, there are bones that are used to protect the brain, like the frontal bone right there. We probably all knocked that one pretty good. All right, that protects the brain, so that's what we call a cranial bone. So one kind of bone are cranial bones that protect the brain. And then there are some other bones, all right, that you use for breathing, for eating, for articulation, right, and for expression. Those are what we call, you're looking at me strange. So you're expressing yourself. That's good. Okay? I'm not making these up. We call those what? Facial bones. Right? So you got cranial bones and facial bones. So when we look at these bones, try to classify this bone as being either cranial or facial. And just a little comment about learning bones, the names of bones and processes of bones and things like that. It's really good for you to know your bones extremely well because it will help you through the rest of the class. So when you learn bones, you also learn a lot of vascular anatomy. You'll learn muscle anatomy. You'll learn a lot of neuroanatomy too as well, just by learning names of bones. For instance, here we have the frontal bone right here. There is a lobe of the brain underneath the frontal bone. Guess what the name of that lobe is called? It's called the frontal lobe. See how easy that was? Okay. Here is, posterior to the frontal bone, the parietal bone. You already now know the name of the lobe of the brain that's associated in that area. That would be the parietal lobe, right? So it really pays to know a lot about these bones and just don't cram and learn the bones, but keep them with you so that you remember all that neuroanatomy and muscle anatomy. All right, so here we have some cranial bones. We got the frontal bone, the parietal bone. Way in the back over here is the temporal bone, and then there's a bone that goes all the way across. I see it right here. I see it in the posterior part of, this is an orbit, this eye socket is an orbit. It goes all the way across, one bone, and it ends up over here. That's called the sphenoid bone. It kind of looks like a bat or a butterfly if we were to disarticulate the skull. All right, so that's an important cranial bone. Another important cranial bone also helps make up part of the nose right here, and that's the ethmoid bone. It forms the floor of the cranial vault kind of right here in this part of your body. But I want to talk about this structure a little bit. All right, here you have a big cavity that you use for breathing. You get air moving in and out of this, that nasal cavity. All right, and if you ever have a chamber or a cavity in your body that's separated into two separate rooms, that separation is called a septum. So this middle thing right here in your nasal cavity, that's called the nasal septum. And a bone that helps make the nasal septum right here, this is the ethmoid bone. And as a matter of fact, we call that the perpendicular plate of the ethmoid bone. And these plates are important because if you order air as it's going in, right, as instead of being turbulent air, it's easier to breathe in and out. All right, just like if there is, think of the 405 freeway. And if you have all the lanes of traffic going nice and linear, right, traffic can go very, very fast. But what happens if all the cars are changing lanes? Can you go fast? No, right? It's just too much resistance. Same thing for air moving in and out of your body. If it's nice and orderly going in, it's easy. If it's turbulent, it's very difficult to breathe, right? So the ethmoid bone is really important because it aids breathing. And if anybody has ever broken their nose, they have difficulty breathing because that air is very turbulent. All right, so the superior part of the nasal septum is made out of the ethmoid. The inferior part right here is made out of a bone we call the vomer. The vomer is this inferior part. You got some really good exercises online, drag and drop exercises that you can do, but I'll go over this some more. All right, there are some other little shelves inside the nasal cavity that we call turbinates sometimes, or sometimes we call them nasal conchae. There are plates inside the nose. They're covered with mucous membranes, right? And mucous membranes contain moisture, right? They have a vascular supply. So what do you think the function of those turbinates are? Again, it orders air so that it's easy to breathe in and out. But what else can it do? What else? What are they good for? No, I'm trying to hear you. They're not really good for hearing necessarily, but if the air is cold, like if you go up to Big Bear or something, it's cold, it's below zero, and you get that freezing air in your lungs, what could it do to your lungs? It could freeze your lungs, which would be not an option I would choose, right? Okay, so those turbinates warm the air up, right, when the air is cold. But when the air is hot, like have you ever been hot, like in Phoenix or something? What's your body temperature? 98.6? Maybe you're in 120 degrees. When you breathe in, those turbinates cool the air down so that you don't burn your lungs. So they help condition the air. This weekend, we're going to get some Santa Anas. Humidity is going to go to zero. All right, it's going to have very little water content in the air, and if you breathe that air in, it's going to desiccate your lungs. It's going to dry out your lungs, and maybe they'll break or fracture. But those turbinates do what? Will humidify the air as you breathe in. So those turbinates are really important because they condition the air for you to breathe within, okay, certain kinds of limits. Of course, if you're in a burning building and you breathe in burning gas, then of course they won't help you, right? So only under certain limits will it help you. Okay, a couple other bones we see. The mandible. Do you think that's a cranial bone or a facial bone? That's a facial bone, important for what? Eating, breathing, articulating. This is also noteworthy because this is the only bone of all of these that we're going to learn that actually moves. That's the only bone that moves. Unless you're, what, one of those Martians on TV or something and their head actually wiggles back and forth when they're communicating. All right? That doesn't happen with us, right? So mandible is also called the lower jawbone. You have an upper jawbone. Okay, because we put teeth into these jaw bones, this is what we call the maxilla. Maxilla, here and here. And then that's a facial bone as well. And then another facial bone, very, very prominent, makes your cheekbones right here. That's called the zygomatic, right? You got two zygomatics. All right, and then, okay, I'm asking all of my students in lab to memorize this picture as a quiz. All right, so I find this a really important picture. So you can see what? Frontal bone, parietal bone, and then way back over here, occipital. We talked about the sphenoid already that goes from one side of your head to the other. Posterior to the sphenoid is the temporal bone. So notice that the sphenoid bone is kind of in the location that you would say that's your temporal region, right? That's kind of a misnomer because where is the temporal bone at? It's way posterior, more associated with your ears, right? So that's your temporal bone. Then we see that zygomatic again, maxilla, mandible, the nasal bone. here is a tiny, tiny, really fragile bone called the lacrimal bone, and then behind that we can see the ethmoid once again. All right, so next time I'm going to start talking about how we talk about and classify landmarks on bones, like a rough raised area, like this mastoid process. What's the function of a mastoid process? Something's pulling on it, so it gets big and rough. It's for muscle attachment. All right, so this is where we're going to start. Oh, can't do it. 2 weeks. Yeah, because don't forget, you have a test next week. And on Monday, no class. And what?
Quiz 4.
Quiz 4, yeah, I'll check that.